Okay, we have a special episode today. This is a listener, James, interviewing me. Let's go.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Okay, happy Tuesday, everybody. So this is hot off the press. Literally the day before we're going live, I'm recording and editing this. So I'm going to keep it short. It's a little bit longer interview than normal, and I'm actually being interviewed. And we have James here. So let me just get right into this. Enjoy.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in for today's episode, number 93. Today's going to be a little bit different from the episodes, as you may notice. I am not Mike. My name is James Solis, and I've been listening to the Global from Asia podcast for quite a while now. And, you know, as I was listening to some of the recent podcasts, I realized I didn't really know much about Mike himself. You know, I knew a little bit about him, a little bit about his family, some experiences he's had, but not so much about what he does. You know, my curiosity kind of drove me to reach out and suggest having an episode about him to update his audience. But, you know, Mike ended up responding and said, yeah, you know, that's a great idea. I've been thinking about doing that. But how about you interview me and you do it? That way it's a little bit more interactive. And, you know, for me, I was a little bit shocked, a little bit surprised, but I was down for it. Why not?
Awesome. Yeah, this is great. I'm in the hot seat today. I'm a little bit nervous. We're doing this on the fly, so let's see.
Don't be, man. I feel like I'm on the hot seat. Actually, I've never done this before, but well, it's your turn now, man. You're being roasted.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go.
So I guess prior to going on to this, did you? Because we spoke for about maybe 5 minutes before this, and we didn't really get to know each other. Did you want me to tell you a little bit about myself?
Yeah, of course.
And how
James,
I came
I'd love to
find out about you and your podcast? Sure.
As much as you can share, I'd love to know. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So my name is James Solis. I was born in California and lived in different parts of the world. My father was in the military, so that allowed us to travel. I lived in Japan for about 3 years, came back. You know, my father, he's always been an explorer, and he's always encouraged us and my family to be proactive. And, you know, he's taken us on a Mount Fuji trip. We had to do that when I was younger. We did a few family road trips across the States. And, you know, we once took a week boat trip from Hawaii to California. And since then, I've just had this this angst to travel more. And, you know, in my teenage years, I've gradually grown an interest in entrepreneurship. And I haven't really had a 9-to-5 job. Most of them really revolved around these sales positions. And, you know, a few years back, I was working in real estate as a sales agent and property manager. And, you know, every time I got a decent check, man, I would just cash it and just leave the country and travel. I've been to the Philippines, been to Belize, other parts of Central America. And, you know, once I took a planned week trip with some friends to Beijing, it was only planned for about 10 days. But it randomly ended up turning into a 3-month solo journey for myself in China and Hong Kong. So, you know, I've been there. I have a little bit of experience, Mike, and that's why I'm, you know, glad that I'm talking to you because you're actually living there and you've lived there since, I think, what, 2007?
Yeah. You're right. End of 2007.
Yeah. So, you know, that was the trip to China that, you know, when I came back, I've really grown a large interest in finding a way to work abroad. So I really started looking into my options and it really came down to either e-commerce and global trading. And, you know, recently I took a job up at a local retail store here and I'm helping them run their online e-commerce store. And I was hoping to take that abroad, but, you know, very recently I've really developed a large interest in import and exporting. And, you know, I wasn't really sure what to look up on podcasts. So I started typing in international business, importing, exporting. And that's when I found you.
Awesome.
And that's where I'm at now.
Great.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So you're doing it, man. You're the only person and the only podcast I was able to find that was consistent. I don't even know if you have any competition on podcasting, man.
Well, there's others around, but I guess not specifically like in Asia, China that are consistent. I think I mentioned I actually took over my friend's other podcast, China Business Cast, and I'm trying to decide how to balance those two different shows. But yeah, it's true. Like, well, podcasting doesn't seem to be that well known in China, and the internet here blocks mostly everything. So a lot of times, even Westerners like us, like, get lazy with VPNs and slow internet and just don't even listen to audio video stuff at all and just read like blogs. So a lot of people are still kind of like behind on the audio video kind of multimedia content creation in Asia, I would say. Or they're just also shy to put their voice or face on like online. So they're just kind of still doing the blogging, typing content. But yeah, a lot of people aren't still adapting in Asia to making content that is more like multimedia. It's even for me, like, I've been here so long, like you said, like, took me years to get the kind of courage and the to get the podcast going. Because, you know, blogging was hard at the beginning. I started blogging in like 07. Putting your voice online or video online is a little bit mindset difference, you know? So maybe that's the reason why I think a lot of people in Asia are still maybe shy to be on, put their voice online, maybe, or don't even know what podcasting is. Like, I interview a lot of these people on the show and they don't even know what the word podcast is. I have to tell them like online radio or something. Usually I say like online radio. A lot of the people I interview on the show don't know what a podcast is.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Do you think it's due to maybe some restrictions or regulations on like the media outlets and I feel like you kind of get less exposure there in China.
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of like cause I have like a Chinese audience too. Like I have some Chinese language blogs and stuff like that. And they don't seem to listen to, there's also like Chinese iTunes. Like a lot of times iTunes is blocked in China. So there are like these Chinese copies of like iTunes where they have podcasts, but I don't think they're getting as much traction or people listeners as like in iTunes or in the West. I think a lot of times Chinese people want to learn by seminars. So I think I mentioned like even my wife, she goes to like in-person seminars, even if the content is online free, like in a podcast, they'd rather pay money and go to like a hotel conference room and learn by a teacher. So I think also it's basically Chinese don't seem to learn like online as well as like Americans or people in the Western world. I think it's, they, you know, even though I put the free, like, I put free content online, they'll pay me money to do a seminar. Like I do seminars too sometimes in person because they just don't.
Interesting. Okay.
I think it's just a cultural thing, but of course a lot of the iTunes are blocked in China. I don't know how they decide what's blocked or not, but a lot of them just don't work without a VPN.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. All right. So, you know, recently when I was listening to your podcast, I just had no idea what you did. You know, I've heard some parts of, hey, you know, I'm flying to the Philippines. I'm doing, you know, helping my buddy with a SEO company. You know, I think I read something about sourcing from one of your blogs. I remember seeing you also sold some online products, such as the Hong Kong Guide to Business. What is that you do exactly? You know, what were you doing prior to 2007? And then what made you really transition and say, hey, I'm going to move to Hong Kong and do this?
Sure. I guess I do realize I probably confused not just people listening to podcasts, but in real life, like what I do, I think. But of course, there's a lot of different businesses between now and 2007. So I'll try to keep it short. I actually made a small Kindle book about my like 2007, 2008, like coming to China called Destination China, where I try to go through that first year in China. But from 2004, I started selling online on eBay. I lived in New York City. I'm from born and raised in Connecticut, and I went to school at Stevens Tech in New Jersey, and then I graduated and I went to Deutsche Bank. I worked on Wall Street. I thought I wanted to be like a stockbroker. All those like 1980s, like 1990s, like Boiler Room kind of movies.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
It just sounded like really, it sounded so glamorous, like the when mess up names of actors and stuff. But, you know, those guys in like the 1980s stretch limos, like on the international phone and like, or Lord of War movies. So I thought I wanted to be like a businessman, like more connected to the finance side, like doing like deals. And, but I started selling online on eBay part-time while I was working on Wall Street. And basically it kind of led me to buying from China in 2006. And I was really tired of working on Wall Street. So I was buying from like Alibaba and working on Skype. And then also I was networking on MySpace with other guys in the industry, like e-commerce guys in my niche of bar products. And they were just saying like, yeah, we're all having trouble buying from China. And then I was like, well, I want to do international business. I want to like go out there. And so I just started saying I can help them and started helping people even while I was still on Wall Street. I was helping people buy from China. And then I decided to quit my job, put in a month's notice, and started doing it. So I had the e-commerce business with three of my friends. And I started sourcing business separately because there was just like, I learned about, you know, like dealing with friends and business. Sometimes we all had different ideas of what we wanted. Like I wanted to have like a big global business, but they wanted to have like a cash flow part-time business. So I kept the e-commerce business as a cash flow business. And I started Shadstone Sourcing, which is I saw you in my email series. You like that. But yeah, Shadstone was like based on basically my Wall Street nickname. And so I started sourcing.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and I had never been to China, and I was helping people buy from China. And I guess my skill is internet marketing. I love marketing online. So, but I wanted to, you know, have bigger products than like a bottle opener. I ranked in Google for like bottle opener and bar products, but it wanted to have a bigger market. So basically I didn't move to China right away, but I spent a few months in San Diego. Actually, a friend had a room available in Ocean Beach. So I stayed there on month to month, and then I got the courage to come out to China in 2007 and didn't think I would live here. Like you had said with your trip to Beijing, I ended up moving here quickly afterwards at the very end of 2007, and never knew how long I would be here. So I did the e-commerce bar products stuff for 8 years, actually. And I was kind of, it was a smaller market product, and I had like 250 different SKUs, and I was buying from China, India, and Thailand, and I had warehouses in California and New York. But it was just, I had a Philippines call center, small like home office, basically an apartment. But it was very, very stressful because I didn't build a business. Like I've read E-Myth Revisited, I've read Work the System based on a learning afterwards, but I didn't plan the business from the beginning. It was kind of like, I want to sell online. Let me find some products. Let me throw it up on eBay. Let me build a website. Let me figure out. I was always going backwards rather than like planning it. So I was always looking for something to do. I was trying to find maybe partners to help different things. But I ended up selling it to my manager, my Philippine manager. So she's still my good friend, and she took over that bar products e-commerce business. She likes it more than me and worked a deal. Yeah, there's so many. I mean, it's so hard to consolidate this. But so that was like basically that was the phase one of coming to China, my first kind of business. And the sourcing. But then I moved into like tech startups because I was doing a lot of startup events and networking. I love networking. So then basically kind of fast forwarding a few years, but I started a mobile app called Social Agent to connect companies to independent sales reps. I went through China Accelerator, which is an incubator in North China in 2012 in summer. And graduated that in 3 months. It was a 3-month program and worked on raising money and thought I was going to do like some big tech startup in China, like bridging Western companies to Chinese agents. And actually I had an offer for $300,000 investment that I turned down, which was really crazy. But basically it was a Chinese investor, and I started learning very clearly why Chinese entrepreneurs decided to stay working in IBM or in Lenovo rather than doing their own venture, because Chinese investors are much different, at least at that time, than Western investors. And they basically want to have I'm generalizing as all, you know, of course there's different investors in China, yeah, sure. But from what I was also getting told by Chinese entrepreneurs was also coming true from my own doing it. But basically, I decided not to take the investment. And then later on, you know, the company was getting users and growing, but it wasn't cash flow positive. And I decided to merge with a app company here in Shenzhen that's a Hong Kong and Shenzhen-based company called Unchained Apps. So that happened in November of last year. So I was doing social agent basically full-time app company for 2012 until 2014. And now still continuing social agent. We're going through a redesign. It's actually coming out probably end of this month, end of July. And so that's happening. But I'm also doing like, I think I had on a show, but Nora, she works with me and she does a Chinese learning app called writtenchinese.com. And I helped them start a podcast called Two White Chicks in China. That's been going. So basically, yeah, that's kind of like the, you know, part of the merger is I'm a worker. I have shares and I have a contract at this Unchained Apps. So I work there 3 days a week since November of 2014. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm doing this podcast. So I haven't really monetized this podcast. I started this show actually based on Dan Andrews' Tropical MBA, the Dynamite Circle meetup in 2013. And he wasn't saying it to me directly, but he was saying in the audience that somebody should start a Hong Kong or, you know, business podcast. And he thought it would be a really good, like, business opportunity too. So I started this show basically like that week in like October 2013 is when Global From Asia started. So the show, of course, I like doing it, and I'm also trying to figure out how to pay for the costs of, you know, of course, there's not too many costs, but I do have an editor and other artwork people and hosting and stuff like that. So like the guide, yeah, I have like Hong Kong Supercharged, which is like an ebook, and I have a training program that I've been trying to figure out. I haven't technically get it going, and so that's, I hope, helps.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a lot more. And that SEO office is a new project based on a guy I knew in the Philippines from 5 years ago. Uh-huh. And we're going to partner up together then, but it took 5 years, but we're going to do it now. I'm going to be a minority partner in that, but it's also going to be an office I use for my own project. Probably Global From Asia will be maybe marketed and maintained there too. And so that was a long answer.
Very nice. But, yeah, I mean, the SEO business really sounds like it's pretty complementary to your existing businesses. I mean, you got the, you know, you got your app going on, and you also have the actual podcast and your blog. So SEO really relates to all of that, right? It kind of ties it all in together.
Yeah. I love, like, I guess what I've, you know, I think we all learn especially as an entrepreneur, that you have to find what you like to do and what you're passionate about. And yeah, I always liked getting online business, like getting people to find me online and find my businesses and my products. And because I still don't like outbound sales as much as like inbound. Like I love it when people find, I have too many websites. So I still have a lot of websites online that I don't actively use. And I still get like people emailing. I still love the feeling of getting an email from somebody that wants a product or service that they found online. Uh-huh. of a website that I haven't even updated in like 5 years or something like that. It's like pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty interesting. So you're currently doing sourcing now too as well, or that was something you were doing at one point?
Yeah, I had done that, but it kind of with the bar products together, I kind of stopped doing that. Well, I mean, the issue with what my problem then was I took too much fixed cost. So when I first started doing sourcing, I took leads in that people said, hey, I want to buy like 1,000 pieces of something from China, and can you give me a price? And it's not that easy. You don't just go down the street and just because you're in China and find a product. And it took a lot of work. So I had staff, and I was just kind of at that time too naive, but I thought that, well, I invest a little bit up front and then the client will, I'll get this residual order. So I decided I had like 5 staff in the office for sourcing, and it's costing me like $6,000 to $7,000 a month. So I decided to stop doing that.
Yeah. That's
because I tried it. Maybe I had the wrong clients. I mean, I'm learning a lot now. I'm always learning, but probably just working with too small of businesses that didn't have any budget for like you know, like, and then a lot of times if deals didn't go through after I sent a quote, they'll talk to you a lot until you send them a quotation. Then when you say, here's the every answer you could possibly need, now you just pay $10,000. That's when they stopped replying.
Yeah. Did you ever think about charging them a upfront fee?
I had a sales agent in the US that was also fielding in leads, and he charged he's gotten some people to do like $500 retainer that would be used towards the project, but then that was mostly going into advertising for Google AdWords and his cost. Uh-huh. So that wouldn't go to the office. Yeah, I had some other sourcing guys in China telling me to do like a $2,000 or $3,000 like sourcing research report. Uh-huh. But at that time I was still maybe I was just working with two small businesses that didn't have budget that probably weren't qualified to even buy from China. So we didn't actually do the deal, but American guy in Shanghai took over my sourcing business, and he paid me out for like the next year on deals that went through. So we had like three or four recurring clients, but I just decided I didn't like doing sourcing. It was already hard enough to do for my own business, but to deal with like clients and then be between a client and a factory was just a really big headache. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times what I've learned is what I don't like to do. I like to get leads online that would like want to buy from a factory, you know, Google AdWords or SEO. But the servicing was maybe I should have spent a little bit more time developing it, but I was probably working with two small businesses. So I have, there's actually a couple of listeners that are doing the China Business Assistant program where I have people here that they can hire to do sourcing. And then I kind of like help with the payment. I haven't really shared that too much online yet, but it's a program I'm kind of experimenting with where people pay like me and then I'm like an agent to help them work with a sourcing person in China to find the product. And they're paying for the time of that worker to do the sourcing rather than, you know, selling the product to them directly. So that's like what I've been experimenting with. And so far it's been, it seems like the people I'm working with are happy with that. So.
All right, very nice. Very nice. How was your trip to Philippines? You just came back a few days back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, literally just we were talking in email while I was there. So yeah, it was about a week and the office is still under construction. Hopefully August 1st, we should be operational. So yeah, I mean, signed all the company incorporation documents. I will be a minority, you know, it's just two partners. Josh is his name. He's an American guy and me. And, yeah, I went through like the lawyer's office and signed all these all these documents. It was so many, you know, I guess it's not like a U.S. company. So yeah, it'll be the first Philippines company that I'll be a partner in. And yeah, I mean, my role is marketing and actually it's funny now. I didn't think I would be, but, you know, making like standard operating procedures and workflows for staff. I never thought that would be something I would be like good at, but I'm pretty excited. For like about a year now, I've been really good at like standardizing processes. Uh-huh. I don't like doing it, but I like the effect because actually I have a few Odesk workers or Upwork, and I flew them out from different parts of Philippines and I met them in Cebu too. So that was like a secondary benefit, but
nice.
I was meeting some of my outsourced staff in person and they're pretty cool. And what my favorite part about it was in past when I work with Steph, I would talk about like, it would be very open-ended conversations, but now I'm talking because I have all these processes I made like SOPs. Uh-huh. It's just talking about specifically which SOP they're having trouble with and how much time they spend on which business process. Cause then I can kind of tweak how much, it's just it feels a lot more refreshing to have people talking about a business process and then it
sounds like it's a little bit,
yeah, it makes it more real.
Yeah, it sounds like it's pretty effective and it sounds like it just streamlines the work overall. I mean, you just tell them what to do, they follow the SOP and they knock it out, and it sounds like you could get a general idea of how long it will take them, right? And you could kind of break down actual operating costs based on that.
Yeah, I honestly, I think I even blogged back years ago. I was frustrated with like managing staff and managing offices, but I think now it's pretty awesome. Like it just makes it more like a real tangible thing. And if they have a question about the work, they ask about that specific process. And then I look at that process and I try to see if it answers it or not. If it answers it, I give them the answer in the process. If it doesn't, I edit the process to clarify that question. And then when I have turnover in the staff, I just pass that process to the new staff. They review it, right? Rather than me have to retrain that new worker. So it's been pretty awesome. Like, it's still a little bit new, but I think it's going to help a lot with this Cebu office because, I've been doing okay on Odesk and online workers for a few projects. Like, I've been doing a few SEO projects again too, but I think having a physical office, we'll still have some online workers. I don't want to force everybody to work in the office, but there's a lot of people in the Philippines that don't have computers or don't have good internet. Or don't have electricity. You know, it sounds, we have generators in the office. So if the power blows out in the city, we'll still have internet and electricity, which sounds crazy. But yeah, Philippines is still not such a, well, it's getting much more developed than when I was last there, but it's still got a lot to go. So yeah, I mean, we'll still have, I still have a lot of online workers. I told my Upwork staff, don't worry about your jobs, but if you want to work in the office, we have one now. But I still love online work, so I'm not going to force everybody to have to be in an office. But I think some actually work better in office.
Very nice. Okay, cool. Okay, so when you transition out there, you know, I know I've had these moments before where I went to a place and I said, hey, how can I make money here? Because most of the time, what would happen is I would start running out of money and I would have to fly back to the States and start working again for, you know, X number of months or X number of years to save up and to go back out. What, so out of all your different marketing opportunities that you're, all of your existing businesses now, what's bringing in the most income for you?
So I guess really right now it's after the merger working in the app company. So that income from the 3 days a week. That I'm in the office, and also my SEO clients, which is not, that's secondary, but those two are the main income. I went through a big transition when I went to like startup world, like startup, you know, like app and not thinking about revenue. Like when I went to the China Accelerator program, a lot of times people in startups don't think about making revenue. So I took businesses that made revenue, like my e-commerce, even though it wasn't much, it was enough. It was a 4-hour work week able, you know, it was able to sustain me and my lifestyle. But I wanted to do something big. So I was like, oh, I don't need to make revenue. I'll just do this program and then I'll get funding and then I'll get bigger. So yeah, it was like for 2 years, it was very, very rough because I didn't get funding and I didn't get enough revenue. So I was like burning money and like, that's, I think one reason, of course, there's many reasons, but one reason I married my wife because I met her, in those tough times and she was, you know, very, she definitely didn't marry me for money. So it's been through this transition and I keep going back and forth. Like, do I want to, you know, I don't know, like Global from Asia can, I haven't made much. I sold like 15 of these guidebooks, the Hong Kong Supercharged guidebooks. And I think that's about the only income I've helped a couple of clients. You know, like I've done a few like these service contracts, like helped some people open up a Hong Kong company. And I've helped some people with finding staff in China. So it's hard to measure some of it. Like, you know, we got to know each other. I've made a lot of great relationships from the podcast. So I just wonder if I should try to push too much to directly monetize the show or if I should just use it as like a relationship building networking kind of channel.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who are doing podcasts. They're kind of, they're doing a combination of things. They're, you know, they're running the affiliate programs and they're also selling some e-products, things like that. Maybe that's something to look into. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, I imagine you, I guess for me, if I listen to somebody, I don't want them to be pushing products down my throat. But, exactly. you know, if they do recommend some software or some sort of program that I think would help me, and they sent it over in my email and they were an affiliate, sure, why not? I mean, as long as you genuinely really believe in that product, that service, I think that'd be awesome. You know, I don't mind supporting anybody that I listen to on podcasts, but yeah, that's pretty interesting. Okay. So you got the, you said your app and then secondary would be your SEO. Yep. As far as bringing in the most income.
Yep. Correct.
Very nice. Okay. And then what type of opportunities have really arise from podcasting? You've been doing it since 2013, right? About a year and a half, 2 years?
Yep. Yeah. About almost 2 years now, October 2013. So like it's sometimes hard to measure exactly, but I've met so many, like I made some good friends around the world from the show. And I've, like even when I was in Cebu last week, I got an email and it was a guy that's not listening to the show, but he said that he heard his friend listens to the show and that I'm doing an SEO company in Cebu and he's also doing SEO and he's in Cebu and maybe we should meet up. And I'm like, well, that's pretty powerful. That's pretty cool. Right. Like, I mean, mostly it's been making like good relationships with people, like and strengthening current, even people I already knew. Like one guy, David Heenberger, was on the show, and he didn't even know I had a podcast. Like, and I knew him in real life already, like from Dynamite Circle. And he was Googling like Stray Hong Kong, and he found my podcast, and he's like, "Dude, I didn't even know you had a podcast."
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, so. It's like, I guess a lot of people say it's like top of the funnel, like I guess, and it helps make people know you more intimately and trust you more to do business with you or long term. So I've met some pretty awesome people like Angela Chong in Hong Kong, and she's not what I would expect be my target listener. She's does video production in Hong Kong, and she just really likes like having a podcast that talks about like Hong Kong and so she's been listening, and I met her a couple of times now in Hong Kong, and she's always like, she bought my book. I don't think she needed to, but she just wanted to support me. So it's just been cool, like to just really get to know more people.
That's pretty cool. Sounds like you have a pretty supportive audience. What I guess in speaking about your audience, what kind of demographic do you feel like you're getting?
I think, of course, like iTunes, for anybody that has experience doing podcasts, you don't really know anything from iTunes. So, but I mean, generally I get emails and I do have a email list. I try to do email lists, about 350 people on it. And it's mostly like, I think like mid-20s to like mid-40-year-old, which is a pretty wide number age. But of course, like what Western, white, like usually it's like American or European entrepreneur that is looking to either probably a little bit earlier stage to do business in China or Asia with sourcing. But the funny thing is, a lot of times people in China, like even the target listener doesn't listen to podcasts in China because the internet's so bad and things are so much blocked. So a lot of times once people come here, they don't, not just my show, but don't listen to a lot of shows. Like a lot of people have told me that. So it's usually people that aren't in Asia that are wanting to come over or do more business with like China or Asia.
Uh-huh. Okay. And why are the internet speeds so night and day? I think you had mentioned that in one of your blogs. You said, hey, you know, the internet in Hong Kong is such an advantage over living in mainland China. Why is the internet speed so different? I know it's a little bit off topic, but I think I was just a little...
No, it's fine. Thing. Sure. Well, Hong Kong, at least currently, is still I don't know how political, but still basically independent SAR, Special Administrative Region. So the Chinese government policies haven't yet gone into Hong Kong. There's a lot of... I've been talking about it a lot on my more in my newsletter than in my podcast. But there's, of course, been a lot of protests and stuff because Hong Kong wants to stay independent, but mainland China seems to keep on wanting to become more and more Chinese. So with that in mind, Hong Kong doesn't have to have the filtering requirements that the mainland China internet service providers, ISPs, have to have. So the internet is fast in China. If you watch Youku or you do WeChat or you watch things that are hosted on Chinese servers. But like my podcast, I don't host my podcast. Actually, I have a WeChat channel that I don't promote too much. But I mean, basically, most podcasts, of course, Facebook's not in China. So a lot of these things are blocked or banned in China because the government wants to control and regulate what is said on those channels. So like WeChat or Weibo or Youku has to delete content that is against what the Chinese government deems not allowed to be shown to Chinese people. So the speed of the internet in China would be fast if there wasn't it's called the Great Firewall or GFW that blocks everything. A lot of people say if Mark Zuckerberg put a server in China, he would get shut down in a second. You know, Google was in China. They left willingly, but when they were here, Google.cn had to filter out a lot of keywords that people might search for and not allow those people to see those websites that the government didn't want them to see. So that, of course, creates a lot of slowness. So for like you or me in China, we're accessing sites that are probably not in Chinese, that are not in China, so they're going to be slow because even if they're not blocked, the government's kind of like filtering and like watching and trying to record what it is. So of course that makes it slow. So in Hong Kong, they don't have the filtering. You can go to Facebook, you can go to Twitter, you can go to any website, and they have really, really fast like connection to the... They're like the top three, or I think they're faster than most places in the U.S. The speeds like in Hong Kong. I think Korea is like the fastest. I think Hong Kong and Singapore are up there. Actually, they're faster than the U.S. because the U.S. is still like kind of like an oligopoly. Like there's only like a few ISPs that are there. That's why in YouTube you see like, oh, is your YouTube video slow? Click here. And it explains to you the ISPs are making the speed slow because they have to pay for the bandwidth. But the U.S. has like unlimited data, so they have to throttle people to pay for the bandwidth because they don't want to give like such fast internet. So it's actually like Hong Kong is faster than the U.S. actually, which is, and then of course you cross into Shenzhen where I live, it's like the slowest like in the world, like it's like the opposite. Yeah. So I hope, does that explain?
Yeah, no, or I could clarify. I mean, way more than I expected. That was a rather deep explanation, man. Thanks, appreciate that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you live in Shenzhen. Do you work in Shenzhen too, or do you work in Hong Kong?
Yeah. So when I was looking for like partners for Social Agent, when I was decided not to take that investment offer, and I like this company because they're Hong Kong, like the owners are like, actually it's a pretty wide mix of owners, but the company's registered in Hong Kong, but majority of the office is in Shenzhen. So of course there's also a Chinese company. You can't have a Chinese company without a, can't have a Chinese office even if with just a Hong Kong company. So, but the parent company is Hong Kong owned and all the IP and contracts and everything is there. Like with the app store listings are through the Hong Kong company. So, cause actually the other thing about that Chinese investor that I turned down was he wanted me to shut down my Hong Kong company and open a local Chinese company in his name that I would have a contract to him. And they'll move all the IP into China. So I like that this company is more Hong Kong focused, especially, I mean, of course I can't make the podcast the reason, but I mean, I do believe Hong Kong is a better place to do international business than in mainland China. Cause I think mainland China is mostly good for Chinese business, not for international business. Mm-hmm. So is that clear? Yeah. Like, yeah, it's like a Hong Kong owner and there's also a Taiwanese CTO and there's another American girl, Nora's a partner. It's pretty multicultural. Like there's Chinese developers. And so it's pretty cross-border, cross-culture environment.
Very nice. Yeah. So, all right, let's go into your day then. I know when we spoke a few minutes prior to actually doing this, this podcast, my time over here was around 5 PM and over there you said it was 8 AM, but you said you were up at 5:30. Is that, what does your typical day look like? What time do you wake up? What do you do in the morning? Do you have a routine?
Yeah. I'm a Pat Flynn fanboy, as some people say, but I like the smart passive income podcast. Uh-huh. And, I listen to most of them. And he had one show with, Hal Elrod where he was talking about the morning miracle. I think that guy wrote the book and, that was around the end of the year last year. So I was already kind of working towards that to wake up earlier. I also have a kid. So I'm forced to wake up early, yeah. I think. So yeah, basically I wake up at 5:30. I didn't get to that right away. I got to that starting to wake up earlier and earlier since like November last year. But I worked up till 5:30 and I've been sticking to 5:30 since about mid-March, every day, even weekends. So even when I was in Cebu, I woke up at 5:30, and that doesn't matter how late I go to sleep. So I know that sounds crazy, but I do nap. I've been trying to do more naps to make up for that. So I try to, which is actually like a Chinese or Asian thing, or I guess in Spain, siesta. But yeah, I'll try to make up for some of the lost sleep by napping. But I even keep a Google spreadsheet of my morning routine. So I get up at 5:30 and then I get more, you know, basically 15 minutes to get ready. 5:45, I go downstairs, I meditate for 20 minutes, and then I do, basically I follow that Savers, which was on, we'll link it in the notes, but on the Pat Flynn show, which was silence, affirmation, visualization, exercise, reading, and then scribing or journaling. So then, yeah, I follow that basically pretty closely. I tweak a little bit, but I wake up 5:30, 5:45, I'm downstairs, meditate 20 minutes, which is S. A is affirmation. So what I do is for 4 minutes, I out loud say something over and over and over for at least 2 to 3 months to try to make that embedded into my subconscious to break limiting beliefs. And then I do V for visualization. So I take 5 minutes and I visualize either the current day ahead of me or like something far out in the future, depending on how I feel that day, to kind of like try to, again, more subconscious thinking to kind of think, make something true in your mind, because a lot of things is just in your mind. And then E is exercise. So I have a TRX thing, like one of those like rope workout things. So I hang it up on a pole or a tree and I do 3 sets, 3 times of like different body parts, depending on the day,
okay,
for exercise. And then read for 10 minutes on my Kindle. And then I scribe, or I do the 5-minute journal, which is like a Tim Ferriss thing, yeah, which is, you know, like, and that's all that's done in Google Docs. And I have spreadsheets for almost every one of those things. Some are dedicated spreadsheets. Some are just in like a morning spreadsheet. But I also listen to The Art of Learning audiobook by Josh Kogan. I'll mess up his last name, but he was basically the chess prodigy in finding the next Bobby Fischer. And so I really like took that to heart. Like basically he says, like, if you don't journal something, you know, you can't measure and improve. So I've been really like a journal freak. So I've been journaling everything. And then I studied Chinese for like a half an hour. So I did that before we got on the call. Then breakfast with the family at 7:30. So I finished my like that essay Savers thing by 7:30, I'm studying Chinese, 7:30, I'm having breakfast. Then I write every day from, this is actually my writing time. Yeah. So usually I'm writing now, but I guess this is kind of like creating content. So usually I'm doing that. And then depending if I'm going to the office or working at home, if I go to office, I ride my bike and I listen to podcasts or audiobooks for about 20 minutes. And then I get to the office. And even if I'm not in the office, I usually check email by then. So I don't have email on my phone. I don't check email unless I specifically have something to check, like when we were going to talk. So I don't try to check email until about 10 in the morning. And I use a Pomodoro effect, which is like the tomato in Italian. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's basically like 30-minute work sessions, and you time it, and you work on one thing for 30 minutes. So I do like 30-minute sessions of email, then 30-minute session of like what I'm trying to do based on my 5-minute journal, like what are my three top things today. Mm-hmm. So basically then check email again in the afternoon, after lunch usually, and then back to projects like based on my goals for the afternoon. Usually afternoons when I do phone calls or podcast interviews normally, or night. So like my morning is usually like just for creating content or like creative work, where afternoon is more like manager mode, maker versus manager is another thing I studied. But and then evening, I try not to work too much. Sometimes I write the newsletter for the week, usually at night, or maybe some podcasts, editing stuff, or listing things. But I usually try to spend time with the family at night, about like 7 to 9, and I'm usually asleep between 9:30 and 10 p.m.
Very nice. That sounds pretty regimented, man.
I wasn't like this even a year ago. So my wife calls me a robot, but I think it makes robot things out of repetitive tasks so that you can be more creative with really creative things, right? So your brain, it's like SOPs, right? You don't have to think about repetitive things. Like I even make SOPs for my own work so that I don't have to like think about it. Like when I list the podcast, I open SOP, I copy paste the template, I paste it into WordPress, I edit this, edit that, edit this, edit that. Like, and then I can think about more creative things when I need to, like writing a book or writing posts or other things.
Very nice. Yeah, that sounds insane. You know, I'm sitting here and, you know, I'm kind of going through the same motions too. I'm trying to incorporate a better and healthier lifestyle. And, you know, I believe a lot of similar things you do, as in, you know, you kind of have to think positive. You have to think of what you want. And it's really ultimately about training your subconscious. I've kind of been getting into that as well.
It's true.
And I've read.
Subconscious, exactly.
You know, meditating, I've always wanted to get into that. I just haven't. And then I know the power naps, heard those things are pretty pretty good too. It's just recharging you during the day.
It's true.
Okay, so now I have a much clearer picture of who you are and what you do. And I think it's going to start helping me make more sense, you know, when listening to our podcast now. I think the last thing I really want to touch base on, I guess, is your family. I know you. I know what you do. What about your family? How'd you meet Wendy, and how'd all of that happen?
Sure. So I think one of the best things out of my startup, 2 years doing like a full time tech startup, was I met my wife. So she was in Beijing and doing app marketing for a app marketplace in China, like a Google Play of China. And I found her from my product was searching in Weibo for potential business development contacts. So she came up in the list and then was on my, like, because it's a sales tool. So it was like one of my targets for business. And we met for business, but we really connected and got to know each other. No, even though, you know, like a lot of times it's hard with Chinese and Western culture and mindset, but she works in tech and we have a lot of similarities. So we were dating, and actually I ended up going back to Hong Kong and, well, Shenzhen. My CTO of Social Agent at the time was Chris Lee, based in Hong Kong. I finished a program in North China. I moved back down to South China. But we still were like together, and then a lot, not just her, but other like investors and business people were trying to convince me to move to Beijing for my startup. But I decided to stay down south. So we ended up her coming down here and getting married, and pretty much almost the same time we were married, she found out she was pregnant. And then, so we had baby boy Miles, and he's in the other room now, and he's a little bit over a year old now. And I had the kid in China. I was thinking about doing it in Hong Kong. That could be another whole long podcast, but there's differences in differences in being born in Hong Kong from in China. So, but he was born in China, and he has a U.S. passport under me, and under my work permit in China. So he's like a another foreigner in China like me. And I live with my father-in-law, and sometimes mother-in-law or aunts, and different rotation of Chinese family living here. So it's like a three-bedroom apartment right on the border of Hong Kong and China. So basically, yeah, I mean, and then my family, so I was born in Connecticut, but mostly all my family's left Connecticut, and my parents retired to Florida, and my sisters, and I have a younger sister in Wisconsin. And I have still some other, like, aunts and uncles in, like, Northeast, like, Vermont and some parts of Connecticut. So that's basically it so far. And
yeah. Right on. How did your family react when you told them you wanted to move to China?
So I think the harder one was quitting Wall Street. So I think it was Christmas 2006. I was down in Florida, and I told my family I wanted to quit my job on Wall Street, and I was making over $100,000 a year, and I was like 25 or something. So, you know, my parents I think they had 2-year college degrees, and you know, like more like blue collar kind of people, and I think, you know, they were always so happy for me to get a degree and to get a good job. So I think that was the harder conversation. Then I think what I usually joke with my friends is I think I broke them in already when I quit my job, because when I said I'm moving to China, I was already living in California when I left and I was living in New York, you know, they were in Florida. So I was like, I only wouldn't see them more than a couple of times a year at that time, even when I was working. So of course now it's some, I don't see them for like a year and a half. I basically average going home. But I think I said in that book, but it's a little bit emotional. But my mom was, when I moved to China, she was crying because she said, why does my son have to leave America to find opportunity? So.
Whoa, that's pretty deep.
Yeah. So.
Man.
Because she's. You know, it's not like they've been in America that many years. They're immigrants just like most people in the U.S., but she's very patriotic, and my sister too. So, I don't know. Sometimes people interpret it as being not patriotic to work outside of your home country or outside of America. Like, but anyway. But yeah, that's... They're of course they miss me. I miss them. I think that's one of the hardest things I think about for me. I mean, of course there's the food you miss and other things, but family and friends is like the harder sacrifice.
Yeah, that's very understandable. Well,
like my last point is there, they haven't met my kid yet. So I'm going to take
off. Oh, they haven't met your kid.
Yeah. So I'm going back to the States in September. First time since Miles was born, and he's coming with me and Wendy. Wendy's been once before, but they also met her when I was already married, so for the first time. So they've kind of gotten used to my chaotic, maybe our weird lifestyle.
Randomness.
Yeah. And but the tricky part here is, like, I think I mentioned on the show before, is I'm going to fly to San Francisco just because it's like West Coast, there's most flights, it's like the cheapest, and I'm going to figure out domestic flights. But I'm probably going to have to go to New York for like my Northeast family to meet everybody, and then I'm down to Florida for my parents and other things. So yeah, it's going to be tough with the... Before it was like with the wife, now it's with the kid too. So it's not like when I was single and couch surfing and, you know, like traveling.
Yeah, it's not going to be that easy, right?
So yeah, I got to... plan this one a little bit more, but I also hope to do some meetups with some people in different cities when I get back. I'm so busy, but I'm gonna try to put something together if people want to come meet up for coffee or drinks or something. See if I can do that.
Well, very nice. If you ever make your way down to San Diego, feel free to hit me up, man.
Yeah, that would be great. I love San Diego. It's one of my favorite places.
Yeah, Ocean Beach. That's pretty nice too. You landed in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I was lucky. My hometown friend from Connecticut like drove cross country and just picked San Diego because he liked it and got a job. So he had a place for me there.
Yeah. The weather here is just stunning, man. I mean, it's almost like no humidity. It's sunny every day. It's just so beautiful.
Definitely.
And yeah. All right. Well. Yeah, I mean, that's about it, Mike. Thanks. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I appreciate
James.
And I hope your audience has a better understanding of who you are as well. And going on, I think it's going to help everybody.
Great. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad to do it. I don't know. I always am just shy to just do self-promotion or, you know, I don't know what people really want to hear, but, you know, I'm glad we did this. So thanks. And, we timed it right because I don't know if people can hear the construction, but there's, I don't know if you can hear that, but there's starting to be construction in upstairs from my house.
Yeah, so there is always construction. Yeah, when I was in Beijing, man, construction just never ended.
Yeah.
Ever. Dude, I couldn't even sleep most of the time. It was just insane.
Yeah, it's true. So I am sometimes having to reschedule interviews because of construction. So I guess maybe it starts at 9. Maybe we just timed it right.
Cool. Have you I know you gotta get off here pretty soon. Have you ever thought about doing any import and exporting?
Yeah, I mean,
I guess I didn't bring it up,
but I still have a product that I did that was a bar product, and I'm doing an order. I just do too many things, I think. So it's a product I've been looking for somebody to like help. It's called the Electra Pour. It's like an LED pour spout. And Chirac Liquor is buying like an order. So it's more like when I get an order from a liquor company, I do it. But I have a license to patent and I own a trademark. But yeah, it's not like a mass. It's more like become a promotional product than a like consumer end consumer product. But yeah, I do want to do it. I was just a little bit burned out from my bar products because I wrote off like $15,000 of inventory in 2 warehouses because it was just like I could never, you know, it was like I tried like, I don't know, it was just inventory is the trick, you know, how do you like, I guess reduce the amount of SKUs you have or something, but.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, after listening to your podcast, I started my podcast a few months ago, but honestly, I really haven't had that much time to really put forward towards it. So I think on my end, I'm trying to get a little bit more control over my time management skills, man, because I think it's pretty important. And you've inspired me to kind of start my own podcast as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. And so I do appreciate that. And
what's the show? I guess is it online or you?
Yeah, the website is called theglobalpioneer.com.
Okay.
I'm still trying to put it together.
Awesome.
But yeah, man, I don't know yet either, because it's one of those things where it's like, I do want to do international business, but where do I start? You know, same thing with e-commerce. I want to do e-commerce, but what product do I get involved with? It's kind of in that at the beginning stages. But, you know, I had a mentor for the past year and a half, and he's been doing international business for a while. And, you know, I think he's the one that really inspired me to do import and exporting. But I think podcasting is such a great idea, especially after talking to you. I mean, it sounds like it's a powerful network tool.
Yeah. It's just it has a, I mean, there's some people that love podcasts. And there's people that never will figure out how to download an MP3 and put it on a phone for some reason. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a great group of people, and the people that listen to podcasts seem to be really awesome people. So yeah, it has a good potential to reach people.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, right now for me, it's kind of like, you know, I asked my mentor this. I was like, hey, where do I even start? And, you know, I have some connections with American brands as far as like exporting, but, you know, he told me, he said, hey, forget about starting with the supply first. Find out what the demand is. You know, once you find a demand, see if you can fulfill that demand. And I guess that's what I'm doing now is trying to take that route. But yeah.
You could also start as like a service company, like sourcing like what I was doing, and then you can see what people are wanting to source or buy or sell. You know, like you can just kind of get your foot in the water by doing it as a service for others, and then building up like confidence and experience of what you'd want to do yourself.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, that, you know, me and my girlfriend, I'm going to be quitting my job here probably next, hopefully 6 to 8 months. And hopefully we're going to be traveling. We're planning on buying our tickets soon to go over to Thailand and and or Philippines. We haven't decided where we want to start off, but I think in Southeast Asia is kind of, or Asia is kind of the starting point for me. I think they just love American branded products, but at the same time, it's kind of like, it's cheap. It's easy to start, right?
Yeah, it's way, the cost of living is really, it's going up, but it's still cheaper, much cheaper. And the trick about selling in Southeast Asia is the customs importing taxes is a little bit expensive or tricky, you know. It could, you know, you got to make sure you know how much the import tax will be, because it seems like everybody, I've been through it a little bit with some small orders, and the import taxes are pretty crazy there.
Yeah. How difficult is it to get some products into Hong Kong and then past China or into mainland China?
Sure. So into Hong Kong is a pretty free market. So, you know, it's similar to like US. It depends on what you can figure out how much the tax will be, and the taxes will be what it says it is. I think like wine is like tax free now. So that's why there's lots of wine there. Whoa. And then getting into mainland China is there's, of course, the legal way, the gray way, and the, like, illegal way. So the legal way is basically the same as if you were taking it from the U.S. directly into China. There's not really any tax savings legally from going through Hong Kong. But the advantages are, you know, of course, you can keep some supply in Hong Kong, maybe sell into Southeast Asia and into China directly. Or you can send, you know, or you can just kind of like send it to Hong Kong and then classify. If it's a brand new product, hasn't been sent and sold in China, you could take the samples into China and then test the market in China without having to import it all into China. Or you know, then they could just in of course a lot of people just kind of like stuff their backpack full of products and take it into China, and I joke about that on my like social media. Usually is like I bring in like baby milk powder and stuff, so because you don't pay tax on like, you know, hand carried items that are for personal use, not for resale. So yeah, taxes are much lower in Hong Kong pretty much for anything. So
what is that considered the gray area or the
that's gonna get more area? Gray. Well, the other gray is like you can mix cargo with other like truckers, and then it's because it's not like one full container, it's like mixed in with other stuff, so it's usually taxed less, and it's kind of gray. Yeah, and I think the black way or the illegal way is there's even services that Chinese people will carry stuff across the border in networks, like on hand carry on, and then will be tax free. But and then it's crazy that's how Chinese people are really good at like systematizing everything. But they will have like a network of human people to take two or three, whatever the maximum amount is you can carry without paying taxes, and then and then bring it all across the border and like put it into like you know, like a shipping packaging or whatever, or give it to you or whatever. So that would be pretty much, it's obviously somewhat illegal, but I mean, it's getting harder. Actually, there's so many stories, but that's getting harder to do because Hong Kong is limiting the amount of mainland Chinese that can go back and forth on a weekly basis. So that's made that harder.
Oh, okay. Right on, man. I know you got you got a busy day today, but it was good getting to know you, Mike. Appreciate
Thanks. It. Yeah, really, I appreciate it too. Thanks, James. That's refreshing. I hope everybody enjoyed. It was a little bit longer, and I kind of rambled a little bit, so I hope I didn't bore everybody to death. I always wonder how much to talk about me and my business on the show or versus interviews and like content. So feedback is always appreciated. I listen to everything, and again, let's have a great day and keep trying new things, taking risks.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.